the work I'm going to talk to you today about is accelerating the cloud with heterogeneous computing. And I did this in conjunction with Sahil Suneja and Professors A.L. Dallara and Ryan Johnson. So let's start off by talking a bit about general purpose GPU computing, which is something that's been a little bit of a trend over the past 5 years or so. So to really give a broad perspective of what sorts of operations are good to execute on the GPU, well, they're data parallel tasks. And we've talked a bit in other sessions about data parallel tasks. And for those who don't know, it's basically where you just apply some fixed operation to several elements of a large data array. So some examples where general purpose GPU computing has been particularly effective are with bioinformatics, data mining, and computational finance. So one place where general purpose GPU computing has not taken off at all is systems tasks. And we're saying this is because of the high latency memory copying that's involved, especially in discrete graphics card scenarios. So what's changed that is now making this possible? Well, now we have on-chip GPUs. So these are hybrid processors that combine a CPU and GPU on a single silicon die. And two big examples are AMD's Fusion Accelerated Processing Unit, APU they call it, and Intel Sandy Bridge and the upcoming Ivy Bridge. So I've included a little diagram that sort of explains what the architecture looks like. So you can see you have the CPU cores alongside the GPU cores accessing main memory through a shared on-chip memory controller. So this provides very low latency access to memory, and it's extremely energy efficient compared to a lot of discrete graphics cards or even traditional integrated graphics cards, which are on the motherboard but not on chip. So now let's talk about the work that we did. So what is this accelerating the cloud business? So we're saying use GPUs to accelerate data parallel systems tasks. So this is a very broad scenario. So what will this give us? Well, this will give us better performance. That's something you'd expect. It'll offload the CPU to perform other tasks, so perhaps just user applications as opposed to just operating system stuff. And one really nice benefit that is not entirely obvious is that you don't get any cache pollution. So if you have systems tasks that happen to access large amounts of memory, you're not destroying the cache locality of any user applications that happen to be running at the same time. And that's because the GPUs have a completely separate cache system. And you also get better energy efficiency as opposed to just executing on CPU alone. Now, above just systems tasks, the cloud environment is particularly attractive for using the GPU. And it's obvious that these processors are coming to data centers because, well, they're mainstream. Both AMD and Intel are pushing them very hard, and data centers are all about using commodity hardware. And while they're there, these GPU cores are likely to be underutilized. A lot of cloud workloads don't have too much of a use for a GPU. So we're saying they'll be very useful for a lot of hypervisor tasks that need to be run in order to ensure effective management of the cloud. So now we're just going to run through what a few of these hypervisor tasks are that would so benefit from the GPU. And then we're going to highlight a few challenges that are sort of getting in our way. And then I'm just going to present some results from a case study we did. So the first cloud operation is memory scrubbing. So this is where you've got some virtual machine that you're destroying, and you want to reuse that memory to create a new virtual machine. Well, they could have completely different tenants which may despise each other. So you don't want one one tenant being able to access the other tenant's data. Another example is batch page table updates. So this is happens in a lot of scenarios where you're creating a virtual machine or you need to make addresses portable using the translating between the pseudo-physical and machine page frame numbers in order to get to perform migration, cloning, or suspend and resume. Memory compression is another useful one. So if you've got a lot of infrequently accessed pages, you just take a bunch of them and compress them. And then using the GPU, you'll get more free memory faster. And another good one is virus scanning. So this basically works by searching memory or network data for malicious signatures. And this basically works by just doing some simple pattern matching. And one final example is memory hashing. So this is where you take each memory page and you compute a hash based on its contents and file it into a hash table. And this will give you things like content addressable storage and can also be used for page sharing, which I'll get into with our case study. So now we're just going to talk about some of the complications we're having, or rather, also some issues that need to be addressed. So in a cloud environment, we've got different privilege levels. If you're just doing GPGPU on your home computer, well, it's usually just for one specific application. But in a cloud environment, you've got hypervisor privileges, you've got guest OS privileges, and then you've got the user application privileges. In addition, you have multiple users. And as I've said before, these users may not like each other at all. So what are some of the requirements we want to put in place for an effective system? Well, we should guarantee performance isolation so that none of the users can affect each other's performance while running on this GPU hardware. We also want to enforce memory protection. So while they're running concurrently, none of the users can access or tamper with each other's memory. So now we just have a few, briefly, management policies that are ways that we could possibly address these issues. So the simplest one, and probably the dumbest one, is to use only the hypervisor is allowed access to this GPU hardware. And this is simple because you have no sharing whatsoever, but it's not exactly the best solution because you're not allowing any of your tenants to take advantage of this GPU hardware. So then you could do, say, time slicing or multiplexing and allow just assign slices of time to each guest OS, which it could do whatever it wants to. And this is better, but you still may have these time slices go unused, depending if the guest OS has any work to do on the GPU at that time. And then a slightly better solution still is to use space multiplexing. And that's where you rely on the GPU runtime to provide you with some statistics on what sort of memory accesses each task needs to do. And then you can lay out the tasks so they can run concurrently. So this will help you get the best kind of occupancy you can get on your GPU. So another complication we're running into is memory access. So all the tasks that I had mentioned assume that the GPU can access the CPU's memory directly. And a lot of them require that they can write to it. But currently, even with hybrid AMD Fusion type processors, copying between the CPU and the GPU's regions of memory is still required. So we want them to actually truly share memory. So we don't want there to be a partition between CPU and GPU memory. We want the GPU to be able to access arbitrary CPU memory. So this makes some tasks completely infeasible on the GPU, but it makes others less efficient. So our case study, which is page sharing, it's present in VMware, ESX Server, and Xen. It has a few different implementations, but it basically works by deduplicating memory. And that's you, in at least the ESX server implementation, you use memory hashing to identify sharing candidates based on their contents, and then you remove all but one physical copy. So doing all of this memory hashing is really heavy on the CPU. So you have this sort of trade-off. So the more that you scan, the more sharing opportunities you're able to exploit, but then the heavier load you put on the CPU. So we did an implementation on this using OpenCL, which is a GPGPU framework. And this is a little different from what we presented in the paper, as now we have a AMD Fusion processor which has been released. So using the CPU, we get about, on the Fusion processor, we get about 14 seconds. On the GPU, including time to transfer between CPU and GPU memory, it's about a second. On the CPU, we have about, about 5 seconds on the disk, on a discrete Intel Core i5. And then for a discrete graphics processor, which is a lot more powerful than the current Fusion processor is, you get even like much less than a second. So these figures are kind of rough, but the actual numbers work out, so you have about a 20-fold increase in each case for the GPU over the CPU. So just to quickly finish up, hybrid CPU and GPU processors are mainstream, they're here, they're being actively pushed by the strongest manufacturers in the market, and we want to get the full benefit of these processors in data centers. So we argue that we should use them to accelerate and offload hypervisor tasks to perform administration on the cloud. And we also talk about the need to consider effective management strategies and address some of these memory access issues. So, and then our case study, which we presented, even with these complications, shows a lot of promise with about 20 times of a speed up over the CPU implementation. Thank you.
Any clarifying questions for Elliot?
I was curious if these GPUs can do I/O operations, the storage stack.
Well, no, it needs to reside in memory at first. So you'd have to say read in from storage into memory. I don't believe any current implementations can access. They can perform file operations themselves. That would need to be something done on the CPU first.
Okay, because as you're describing your talk, actually, I was thinking some of the applications that would be really cool would be if we could do use it for scrubbing of hard drives to make sure that your data is good, or data compression on your hard drives, or big table tablet compression, or even checksum verification.
That would be a great future direction, because a lot of the examples we deal with is talking about just memory, but if we could include storage into that as well, that'd be better.
Oh, cool.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, maybe we can thank Elliot one more time.